This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
Today is the worst that it's ever been, or the closest it's ever been to not making. No, actually, no, I didn't make it once.
Yeah.
And that was entirely my fault, I imagine. But here, moments to spare, getting it in the bloody back of the neck. Is it back of the neck?
Net.
No, that's... I've got it in the back of the net. Got home, I was in trouble, got it in the back of the net.
Got it in the... Yeah, I think people do say in the neck there, didn't they, for that?
God, Bobby Robson. I got into the locker room and there was Bobby Robson. And... got it in the back of the net.
So.
Yeah, he said I played very poorly. I don't know anything about football.
No.
And I think that's one of my special powers.
Yeah, Bobby Robson's a good reference. I think when I think of football, there's only like about four people I know who play. Like, in my head, like I think the name Matt Letizier is a current reference.
I don't know who that is.
There you go.
Is he one of the fellas out of Friends?
I think he is, yeah.
Fucking hell. Oh.
Nick and Nat's Fan Club on right. FUBAR Radio.
Must try harder. I think there was like... yeah, listen to five-star fan club.
Yeah. Currently, a five-star show.
Five-star show. Five stars already. So, fucking
everything
hell.
Everything else is for free.
So, my name's Nick Helm. This is
Nathaniel Metcalf,
and you're listening to Nick and
Nathaniel Metcalf's
Fan Club. First rule of Fan Club, tell your friends about Fan Club. Some of you have been doing it.
Maybe all of you. We're not sure how many people listen. Maybe everyone has done it.
Some of you have been telling your friends. Some of you have not been telling your friends. And then there's a large proportion of you that have no friends. So, you know, we're glad to be that friend for 2 hours a week. It's great. Great to have you on board. Keep sending in your suggestions and fan art. And by keep, I mean hasn't been any for a while. Yes.
You've got a hat on, Nick, and a jumper. I'm very hot in it.
Oh, it's fucking boiling. Okay. It is. Right, okay, I've taken my hat off. I can hear better.
There you go.
And Natalie, we're going to get to reviews in a little bit. Can you put them in some sort of order that makes sense on the screen? Because there's the first page footer and stuff like that you've put on my screen here. And I don't know what a footer is, but it's basically broken up. No, don't have a conversation. Oh, God. Anyway, so it was your birthday on Monday.
It's my birthday. I'm 40 years old.
40 years young.
40 years young.
Do you feel that life has really begun?
It's begun now. This is it.
This is it.
I feel like...
No more dress rehearsals.
No, this is it. It's really been kicking off in the last couple of days.
What's happened?
I watched that Gaslight film you got me. That was good.
Oh, did you? Watched it? Did you watch it?
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Really like it.
Yeah, it's good, right?
Really good.
It's modern. Didn't you find?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. Like, it felt like even then... Hitchcockian films were like a genre. And it's like, oh, it just feels like a proper...
Yeah.
And it's very sort of stylish in that way. I think the FUBAR studio sounds like it's fallen apart.
What the fuck was
that? I know what's happened.
The door handle's fallen off on the other side. I mean, we are doing a show, right? I'm sorry, correct me if I'm wrong, but we are recording. This isn't a rehearsal. We're 3 minutes in. And it's... what's
Matt
this?
Matt Dizemarash has gone all red.
Different first page. I mean, what are the options? I mean, come on, I can't be doing this while we're doing this.
I'll do it.
So the Gaslight is the 1940.
40. There's another version which I haven't
1943,
seen.
1943, is it?
Something, 43 or 44.
Starring Ingrid Bergman, but the original 1941. I went to see it a few months ago and I was really excited about it. And then I came in and I was raving at Nathaniel about it. And so I've got him and I bought him a copy for his birthday. You're welcome. And. Okay, so I just saw all of the stuff that they did. They did a thing. It was really Scorsese-esque about with the newspaper headline, and it zoomed into this newspaper headline.
Yes.
You see a newspaper and then it zooms into the headline and yes. you're just like, oh, that's really sort of, that's a really modern technique that's in this film that was made in 1940.
Yeah.
And then there's the bit with the tree at the beginning where it crossfades from a tree being planted to a tree that's now been yeah. there for about 30 years to show passage of time. And even films today would normally have like a little subtitle saying 30 years later or 20 years later.
It all felt slightly non-traditional. And even the things like the detective in it, he's like a sort of retired detective who just can't quite
put the case together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's quite nice sort of thing where it's just like, it's just someone who comes across this thing by accident and then ultimately is just like,
something doesn't make sense.
Yeah, this doesn't make sense.
And he's just sort of in his spare time starts piecing it together.
Yeah.
But the main bad guy's performance is incredible, I
yes,
think.
Yeah. It's like a proper arch melodrama. And it's really well played in that way, because it's like, it feels like a real directed film for the actors, because it's almost like he's going to go, turn it up. So every performance is really like on edge. Everything feels heightened.
Yeah,
and like,
but it's a really, and I hate using this word to describe anything other than food, but it's a really delicious performance, because he's sort of like clearly reveling in it.
Mm.
But it's not like, which can happen with actors of that era. It's not like so big. It's not too big for the cinema, and it's not like a stage performance, but it's just this really incredible, like,
yeah.
he's just reveling in this performance. And I just think am I right in thinking that the 1940 Gaslight is the one where you're always aware?
Yeah, I was just about to say that. That's one of the nice things about it, and that sort of makes the performance better, where you're seeing behind the curtain of what's really happening.
Because the remake, because the one thing I thought when I left was, I think the only way you could maybe improve on this or do like a twist is if the fact that he was gaslighting her was
a mystery. Yes.
And then they do that in the remake and it doesn't work as well.
Okay.
And I
had exactly the same thought, though. It felt like, oh, it's sort of weird that you just know
that's... because that seems like that's the reveal. But and what's really nice is there is a version of it out there that's still sort of like, you know, from the time where they did try that. And obviously, but I think that the remake is really baggy. There's like so much that's extra in there. There's like a huge subplot, and where she's a, it's not a huge subplot, but it's just extra character stuff for Ingrid Bergman. We've got Ingrid Bergman. We might as well, you know, make the most out of her. But what I really like about the original, the 1940 version, is that it just feels really sort of like slick.
Yeah,
and it's sort of like you whiz through it, and I just think he's the most evil, one of the most evil characters that's in any. And he doesn't go, although he does murder someone at the beginning, but he doesn't go around murdering like loads of people. Just literally is just fucking with someone's mind for like an entire film. All of the performances. What I really also really like about it is that as innovative as loads of some of the camera setups are incredible. Like
yeah,
the
camera, that's what I thought.
They've built this set of, I can't remember what square it is in London.
Pimlico Square.
Pimlico Square. And they've built this set of Pimlico Square, and then the camera just sort of like floats through it for the shots. and what's really fun about that is that it's clearly a set, because whenever they're walking on the street, you can hear their feet hitting sort of like... wooden boards, you know. They've built the set out of kind of plywood, and so you've got all of the, so they haven't been able to, because it's such an old film, the sound is all kind of like on location and on site, so they haven't gone back and sort of like muffled out the footsteps or anything. So and there's, when they shoot the house from the left looking right, you can see all the other houses in the square, but when they shoot it from the right looking left, there's clearly like a drawing of some trees behind them. And it's just like, and I love all of that, where you can see kind of like the way it's sort of pieced together.
Put together.
But you can literally hear them kind of like walking on this hollow floor, and when they come up and down the steps of the building, and you just think, it's a set. But
I think
there's craftsmanship to that.
I've been watching sort of things recently that from that kind of era, and right up to the 70s, where it just feels like the way you kind of construct any kind of sort of, I guess, piece of drama or something, is that it's like you make every scene its own little play and everything. So you have like a scene where the point of this scene is for this to happen, and within that you can have all other different things happening, but it's just how every scene's kind of important and has to be in that place, but within that you can have all other, you can add things to it.
You've got,
you can kind of make it richer.
Structure to every scene, you know, there's a beginning, a middle and end, there's a purpose to everything.
And even within scenes, like, it's just
that's
that,
what I mean. That's what I mean. So you've got a screenplay with a story and a plot and scenes, and then within the scene, you know, what's the purpose of this scene? Why is this scene in the film? And they set something up, something's discussed, and by the end of it, as you know, I think that's really, if you take a scene out, then there's something missing. Yeah. Whereas you could take loads out of the remake and it'd just be like, it felt long.
And there's lots about like modern films that feel very baggy in that kind of, things
what's
are just
that?
There.
Didn't we see something that was, oh, right, yeah.
Oh, right. Okay. But there was things like when you talk about films like Suicide Squad, where the scenes in it that don't really make any sense because they're obviously based on an earlier draft of something that never really...
Or they've gone like this, oh, we like this scene, you've got to keep this scene, but we've cut out all the other scenes that make this scene have any relevance or context.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, well, what you should do is either forge ahead and make the rubbish film that you were making, or you should reshoot it.
Yeah.
But don't do like something in between where you're going to do... I don't know.
In the era of DVDs, when it was a thing to go, oh, I've got all the deleted scenes, and you watch them and go, oh, yeah, absolutely understand why they got cut out. Like, it's nice, or it's might be funny or whatever, but like, there's never, it's always a good reason to make something shorter. It's always just like, yeah, just like it's fun when you watch it, but there's no real need for it to have been in it.
Yeah.
You didn't miss it. Doesn't feel like you're missing anything. And I was watching Pennies from Heaven as well, the
original Dennis,
Bob Hoskins, yeah, Hoskins, Dennis, but Dennis Potter.
Just opening my Caribbean Crush.
Let's see. How is it this week?
Woo! Grapefruit, mango, and juicy pineapple.
Is that Levi Ritz's Caribbean Crush?
Yes. Get him on. So,
apparently not.
Yeah, is he coming on? Would I genuinely like him on? This is a fucking ridiculous question to ask me while I'm on air. Would I genuinely like Levi Roots on? For a start, it sounds like you don't have any faith or trust in me. And secondly, I drink his product every week. It's the absolutely juiciest pineapple I've ever drank. I'd love to ask him where he gets that juicy pineapple. Don't talk over me. So, come on.
I was going to say that is, it's sort of TV, and I think that sort of 70s TV comes from theatre rather than film.
So, did Dennis
Potter,
right? I don't know much about Dennis Potter, but he wrote TV plays, right? Mm-hmm. So, he wrote Singing Detective, Pennies from Heaven, Cold Lazarus was his last thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think I watched Cold Lazarus.
Lipstick on my collar.
I think Singing Detective, it was Albert Finney, was it?
No, it was Michael Gambon.
Oh, fuck. Right, and he had all that makeup.
Cold Lazarus is Albert Finney.
Right. I mean, I don't really know much about Dennis Potter's plays, but I thought as a magician he worked great. Of course, that was Harry Potter. Fuck me! Coriolanus. That's the sort of stuff that he'll shout out.
He's a funny fella, isn't he? Daniel Radcliffe. He seems very nice. He seems like a very nice, but he still looks like he's got this thing where he's like, he's always really enthusiastic, isn't he, on things? And he's that kind of way. It's quite sweet, and you go, oh, I bet he's really lovely. But
I think Daniel Radcliffe is really lovely. I cannot shake out the press conferences they did on about the third Harry Potter film, when he's just like, yeah, I'm listening to The Jam at the moment. And he's like this petulant child that's just found his dad's punk albums.
But he's probably, how old would he be then? 14 or something?
Yeah. It was just like, uh-huh, yeah, all right, mate. He's like, yeah, I want to set the world on fire. And then the next year he was back to being like, oh yeah, it's really just great to be part of a franchise.
Just going through puberty. Yeah. He's probably like, The Jam at the minute.
It must have been so difficult for him. Go on. So tell me about
Pennies from Heaven.
Because as I think we mentioned it the other week, wasn't it? That Steve Martin did a remake in the 80s.
With, I've not seen
Bernadette
that.
Peters.
But I was just saying,
it's
that
not available. It's not available. You can only get it on Spanish DVD.
I know. I was looking up this week because I was a bit like, I'd like to see that. But it's got that thing again. It's sort of, I think, the way British TV comes from theatre and American TV comes from film. And you can kind of tell when you're watching it that you just have these long scenes where that has like a plot-driven thing, but it also has within it, it sort of adds other things. It sort of brings in all this kind of... and every character in it is three-dimensional, and people who are brought in at the start that seem very kind of two-dimensional are sort of given all this kind of pathos and things. And it's just like, it's just one of those things you think, this is why it's something that people talk about as being one of like the best TV shows ever, because it's so rich, there's so much going on.
Does it have that 1970s sort of grainy BBC feel to it?
It's actively trying not to. So it's like it's all made on the same sort of camera, it's all made on like video, but it's all sort of lit in a way where there's a they're trying to make it look like old film. So they're deliberately trying to make it look both like occasionally like stage musicals when they break into song, and occasionally sort of like 30s and 40s movies and things.
Right.
So there's an attempt to try and do it. So actually most of it looks like it's been shot on film, but it hasn't been. I think bits of it were, but there's also the thing that they didn't want to do is make it look like every scene was filmed in a different way and mismatched. So they've tried to...
Why would it look like that?
Because I think a lot of that BBC stuff does, because it's all overlit. So you have all those BBC things are all like, it's all like flat light.
Right.
So you're like, your sort of ceilings, your studios, like they film dramas in the same places they do like game shows and
right,
like sitcoms and things. So when they're doing dramas, they're all in these same studios in a BBC building. So in here, they're trying to do it. They're trying to match it all up. So they're trying to make the video sort of degraded and look grainy, like it has a sort of filmy quality
sure,
to it.
Yeah.
And they're also essentially trying to do, you know, an MGM musical in like a BBC studio.
Yes, right.
So the style of it's trying to be all these different things. But it's like, it really kind of pulls it off. I think it's, Seeing Detective is much more modern filmed. It's much more like I think it's probably just shot on film and then broadcast on telly.
What do you think?
I think so. It looks different and it's got a bigger sort of scope. And it looks like...
But it was
doesn't
made like 10
like
years later, right?
Yeah, so 86, I think.
I was going to say 86.
I think it is. I'm not 100%, but yeah.
Yes, 86, I'm right.
But I think that, I mean, Seeing Detective appears like it's been filmed in a real hospital and things. It doesn't feel so set-y in the way that... Because that has an artificial, has a real life hospital setting, but also has the artificial...
But by 1986, they weren't BBC making Casualty.
Yeah.
They would have had access to sets, right? Probably not the Casualty sets.
Oh, no, I don't mean like... I think, like, in if anything, they're better when they're filmed on location somewhere
on
or
location.
Whatever.
But BBC would have had access to stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this has got... I mean, Bennett, remember that stuff filmed on location as well. It's just that sometimes when they have location shots and studio shots that they just look like... One looks like it's completely overlit and is in like a game show studio.
Right.
And then it cuts to outside and then it's all, you know, it looks like it's been shot on film or...
It's weird because every time you say Pennies from Heaven, I think of Nicholas Lyndhurst.
Good night, sweetheart.
Yeah.
In a way, it could be. It has a similar, they have sort of similar vibes to them. They're usually about men having affairs with people in the 40s.
In Pennies from Heaven, it's the depression. And in Goodnight Sweetheart, it's time travel and stealing other people's ideas for music. What's that called?
Plagiarism.
Plagiarism. He's a fucking... he's a plagiarist. He's a time-traveling plagiarist bigamist. What time's that on?
Well, lovable.
7 p.m. tea time. Just on at tea time.
Yeah, just so the kids can watch it as well. Bit of fun. that got weird. Goodness, we are. I think I start watching it.
It started
at a point.
Pretty weird.
Yeah, but there's ones later
where
on.
Where you going, mate? You're going back in time to have sex with another woman from the 1940s. Yes, I am, actually. My scouse friend. well, give her one for me. Good night, sweetheart. It's fucking...
I had ones later on. There's one where... I was watching it for a long... I think they did about 8 or 9 series. And I carried on watching it for a while. And there's a series where he has just got loads of money and he then lives in the flat and the guy next door is Noel Coward from Benny.
Yeah, yeah. Noel Coward's a character for a little bit.
And then there's one...
Fucking hell, Noel Coward. And you're porking two women in different time zones. Something for the kids at tea time.
And then there's one later on. Oh, that's a screen.
Isn't the Noel Coward one where he plays Beatles songs in the pub?
Well, I think that was what he was doing all the time, wasn't he?
Beatles songs.
I think they're always Beatles songs or Elton John songs that he's claimed he's written. Mm. But to an audience that wouldn't really know what that music sounds, so they probably wouldn't like it. They'd probably be like, that's a bit weird, this music. I don't think they'd be like... Like, unless, like, all the people in that pub were, like, really cutting-edge musos.
But didn't he sort of, like, make them all a little bit like George Formby?
Oh, maybe that was
maybe,
it.
Maybe a bit more musical. But then also, the fucking budget that show must have had for music rights.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
It's absolutely... Cause, no,
oh, cause, I know why.
Because Nicholas Lindhurst would have had to go round to Neverland and personally beg Michael Jackson for the rights to the Beatles songs so that he could play them on the
apparently,
piano.
Apparently, though, the BBC don't... Like, they don't have to pay PRS, or they pay some massive amount every year and everything else
is
free,
right.
I think.
No, that is right. I heard a thing about that recently where... I probably can't say.
Okay.
I don't know why I wouldn't be able to say it, but I can't. But anyway, so there's a thing where basically you can do anything you want in England. Oh, well, it happened with Uncle. On the first episode, it ends with Don't Fear the Reaper. And then they didn't have the international rights. So now when you see it on Netflix and stuff, it's got a different piece of music that finishes
really?
The episode.
Uncle had some quite like big... songs on it as well, didn't it?
Yeah, and I think that a lot of that has been... I mean, Ollie and Lila spent a long time sat in a... looking for alternatives. They didn't just sort of, like, use the library music, but, they had to change a lot. But considering the song is... the show is about music.
Yeah,
partially.
Yeah.
They really, like, look, you know, were quite proud of all of their musical choices. And, yeah, when it went over to internationally, they had to change it all a bit. But that's just the thing that happens. Sometimes if you ask the people, they give you permission. But not always.
Oh, and if you get permission, is it just then free? Or is it...
I think that there's still legal implications, but it's a lot easier and you can sort things out. I don't really know.
Apparently, there was a time in the 90s when... I think, was it Quentin Tarantino used to put in other songs than the ones he wanted so that it would look like it was like a second choice. So I think in his scripts
so
initially...
So like he could compromise.
Yeah, they would sort of send a false script or something to people and go, oh, they want this. And if they turned it down, he'd go, okay, can we have this instead? Whereas if you go to them saying, we want this, they'll charge more or something.
I think that sounds unlikely.
Oh, really?
That's... Why would you... Why would you risk the chance of getting your first choice if it wasn't your first choice?
Yeah.
I think what they tend to do with violence and sex scenes and stuff is that they put more violence in, and they'll put like something that's so gratuitous and unpleasant in the film, and then the censors will go, "Well, you've got to cut this, this, and this," and they go, "Oh." Tell you what, we'll cut this definitely for you. And they go, well, all right, you've met us halfway. And
right.
So they use it as sort of like a bartering tool. I think Brian De Palma did that with Body Double.
Right.
That's such a good film, although a weird film.
Oh, it's bonkers, but it is. It is really
I'm not
good.
Even thinking of Body Double, I'm thinking of the other one, Dressed to Kill.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which is what...
I mean, Body Double is weird, though.
When all of those films are really seedy weird. I mean, is Body Double the one where they do the Frankie Goes to Hollywood Relax
yes,
video?
Yes, yeah. Halfway through
this thriller, it turns into a music video for absolutely no reason. And also, it's sort of like Frankie Goes to Hollywood, relax, but they're filming a porn movie, and
and the characters from the film are still going through it. Like, it's also, but it feels like that could have been cut out and been the video for Relax, but that isn't the video for Relax.
But I think didn't they want to use the video for Relax? Wasn't there something where?
But actually, that one is more like the one they used is probably more would probably have more trouble with the censors than the body double one, in a funny way.
It was pretty. I mean, it was banned.
It was. I think it was banned by Radio 1, wasn't it? Or Mike Reed apparently refused to play it.
What is the radio doing banning a video? We're not going to show this video on the air. what was it? Dress to Kill, when he was filming Dress to Kill, the beginning of Dress to Kill, he got that TV actress. And he used a body double, and he used a much younger body double, and it was sort of like a joke about the way you use film. So she's in the shower at the beginning, and all of her face close-ups are her, and then they cut to the body of a woman that's like 20 years younger than her, and then it's kind of meant to be like a comment on filmmaking, and it's a dream as well. It's a dream sequence. Spoiler alert. But from using the body double in Dress to Kill, that's when he thought of making a film about a body double. So he wrote that body double.
Yes, yeah. Hang on. The set for
Frankie Goes to Hollywood sequence in body double was also used for the following year for the nightclub scene in Fright Night. Okay. Of course it was. Fright Night. What a movie. The original. Well, the sequel doesn't make sense, but the original is just so well pieced together. But the remake, there is a sequel, but the remake doesn't make sense the way, you know, David Tennant is a Las Vegas magician. We've talked about this, right?
Well, we've talked about it in real life.
Not
on Fan Club, I don't think.
No. Well, oh, God. No, let's not. Rain it in. Who was there was a new character
last week
that came up with at your birthday party.
Oh,
this is good radio. Come on. What was he called?
This is terrible radio. I'll say this while you're thinking. I saw, like, years later on UK Gold, I saw some Goodnight Sweethearts from a much later era. And there's one where there's, like, an evil... There's two Nicholas Lyndhursts and one's evil going through time.
Like Superman 3?
Yeah, they're split in two. And there's, like, an evil one. And there was one that had Jack the Ripper in it, where Jack the Ripper goes through the time warp. And the reason why... And it's... he's going to kill some women in the 40s in Whitechapel. All set in Whitechapel, you see. And then he gets hit by a bus in the present day, and they're all like, "Yeah, I guess that's why he didn't kill any more women." It's like, "Good night, sweetheart." For the kids, get the kids up. Good night, sweetheart. Son, let's watch this. Bit of fun. Got like Jack the Ripper murdering women.
Oh my God! Now I've got to solve the bloody Jack the Ripper murders. I'm just. Up to my nuts and guts in this woman that I'm fucking in the 1940s.
It's a tough life.
Good night, sweetheart. Fucking. One of the biggest cunts on any fucking sitcom ever. Nicholas Lyndhurst.
You're never ever meant to think of anything. It's like he's having a nightmare, this guy.
A nightmare with these two wives. What is the profession of James B. Donovan, played by Tom Hanks in Bridge of Spies?
What is the profession? Was he an insurance man or something?
We're reading questions from Ridley's Games Room Movie Buff Quiz. You don't have to be a movie buff. You just need to have lived. What is the profession of James B. Donovan? It's a lawyer.
Lawyer, okay.
Didn't give you the... who voices Scarlett Overkill, the villain in Minions?
don't know there.
These are actually quite difficult. You have to be a real buff.
Yeah. Obviously.
It's Sandy B. So
who's Sandy B?
Sandra Bullock. Come on, we've all got a nickname for her. Mine's Sandy B. fucking hell, I can't remember what that character was called. Never mind. It was an actor.
Oh.
He wanted to be in a Ridley Scott movie. This is not radio. So, did you watch it?
Oh, watch Avengers?
Yeah.
I've watched it, yeah.
Did you see it yesterday?
Saw it yesterday.
And?
I liked it. I thought it was fun.
Yes.
I wasn't, like, I thought, I should, yeah, it's difficult to talk about it because so many people are avoiding things.
But, so many spoilers. But then,
but it's difficult, it really is difficult to talk about because it's not really the film it's set up to be. Or, like, not... In fact, I didn't really know anything about it. And I think people talk about...
Spoiler!
This is a spoiler conversation about Avengers. And if you don't want to listen to a spoiler-filled discussion about Avengers, then stop listening now.
Spoiler!
There we go.
I suppose we covered it. Well, yeah, so the I thought if I was a bit younger... I think I like the Marvel films more than you do in general.
Yeah, well, where I stand on the Marvel films is I think they're fine. They're all fairly flat looking. When you think about like Batman and Superman, those are iconic films that I watched over and over again. And I think maybe I've just got to an age where I think of films differently and I treat films differently. I watch films differently. And I'm more interested in seeing things that I've not seen before rather than repeatedly watching the same thing over and over again. And I think with Marvels, I've watched all of them except Captain Marvel. But there might be another couple that I haven't seen. But I think I've pretty much watched all of them. And I don't have any desire to watch any of them ever again. I think when the first Avenger came out, Captain America, I had it on my phone. There was a code that you typed in and then it kind of gave you a digital copy. I had a digital copy and it went on all my like devices. And so I probably watched Captain America a couple of times when I was stuck on an awful train journey or something like that. But even that I found quite dull watching it again. And they don't really do anything for me. And I got more out of a film that I found deeply flawed, like Batman versus Superman, where I really liked half of it and the other half I hated. And so I've seen that a few times. But with the Marvel films, just no desire. And then, weirdly, one of my favourite Marvel films was Thor: The Dark World, which universally everyone hated. But I just like the fact that Thor is on the underground in it. There's a bit when he's on the underground. And
that sort of, they sort of took that stuff and made that the kind of Thor character afterwards, didn't they? They've sort of gone, do you know, it worked better when they're trying to make jokes about it. Which I think is sort of the issue with the first Thor movie, is that I kept thinking there's loads of opportunities for jokes that they never did.
Yeah.
And then later on the character just has become the sort of comic relief.
But also
now,
they bleach his eyebrows in the first Thor movie and he looks fucking weird when you go back and watch it. And his hair is terrible in it. It's just kind of like, I don't like the first Thor film. And then I liked the second one. And then the third one, I don't know, it was fine. But not to go on and on about it, but anyway, so I just think that they're all about 3 stars. They're fine, but they're one watches, and I feel like, because they crank them out so often, it's like watching a TV series. And I've always compared it to like watching EastEnders, and it's just like I've got no desire to go back and watch an episode of EastEnders. You just watch whatever comes next. Now, with... And I was really underwhelmed by the first Avengers movie. And then the second one, I didn't see at the cinema. And then, so then the third one would have been Infinity War.
Yeah.
And I thought Infinity War was great. I really enjoyed it. And it was the only one that I would consider to be elevated. The other problem with the Marvel films is it's the same film over and over and over again. It's like... There's only so many origin films that you can watch, and it's just so I really like Spider-Man Homecoming because it felt different. The ones that feel completely different are the ones that I think that I probably enjoyed the most. And then when it comes to Infinity War, I thought that because obviously it's not it was sort of an origin story, or not an origin story, but it was like it focused on a new character. I thought what was great about it was that it felt like Thanos was kind of like, this is Thanos' movie. Mm. And then rather than try and kind of like fit in 20 main characters, they had one main character, which was Thanos. And then all of the other characters that you've spent the whole franchise watching are kind of like have little bits around him, just as, you know, other characters would in someone else. You know, they didn't treat Iron Man like he'd made a load of Iron Man movies. You know, he obviously had the weight and the impact of the films that he'd had, but he was in Thanos' movie. It's how I felt about Infinity War. I really loved it. And I've not seen it again, but I have wanted to see it again, which is more than I can say for the others. And I'm not like, I hate them. I don't hate them. They just don't mean much
to
me.
I think most of them are quite disposable and... there's a lot where I can't really imagine a time when I'd see him again. There are a few exceptions to that, I think. I think the first Iron Man movie was great and felt really... And I think what was good about them to begin with is that I knew about the comic books before the movies, whereas I think something like the Iron Man movie was better than Iron Man comics were. And it's just thought about it. They've sort of taken a real sort of Hollywood approach to something and gone... Yeah, that's how you should have been doing the comics forever. But they just weren't like that.
I think that's what's really good. It wasn't so... Iron Man wasn't so well known and beloved that they couldn't, you know, change stuff about it and fuck around with it. And I think that that's what was really good, because with the Iron Man film, you go, well, we've seen Spider-Man, and we've seen Incredible Hulk, and we sort of know what that is because that's been part of culture since before we were born. Yeah. You know, they've been making... you know, Hulk stuff since the 70s. And then what they did with, you know, you go Iron Man, you go, I don't know anything really about Iron Man other than he wears an iron suit. And it's never been a very sexy character. Do you know what I mean? It's not like being like, well, fucking hell, what's Iron Man up to? And what they did with the films was they reinvented him for a new audience, but that also satisfied, it's sort of a little bit, although not really, because that was a failure. It's a bit like the Friday the 13th remake, where they took all of the elements that you knew and liked about the Friday the 13th franchise and put it all in one film. Mm. So they didn't remake the original Friday the 13th with Jason's mum, spoiler alert. But by the way, in this spoiler-filled Avengers review, you're also getting spoilers for Friday the 13th. And,
but 1980s.
So they didn't remake the original movie, but they remade everything that you liked about it, which I think he has like a sack on his head at one point.
Yeah.
And then he has the hockey mask, and then the mum comes into it. And I think, and they go, oh, yeah, yeah. And I think that was the right way of doing it. And what they kind of did with the Iron Man thing was they amalgamated all of these things that you knew about it. And what I think that you're sort of unlucky about with Batman is that you end up with filmmakers that are trying to sort of like shoehorn Batman into their vision.
Yes.
As opposed to having a sort of like overview of what Batman is and trying to create that into, well, this sort of like folds 50 years of comic books into... what is Batman? So they're not sitting down and solving a problem and going, what is Batman? You know, Tim Burton's going, well, for me, Batman is boring, so I'll just make it about the bad guys. And Joel Schumacher is, I like it, I've got to make Batman about the toys. So I'm just going to put loads of opportunities for toys and merchandise in it, and we'll make it for kids. And then Christopher Nolan is kind of like, well, I'm not so interested in superhero movies, but what if we made it sort of like a real world thing? And then Zack Snyder's like, well, I think Batman should have a gun and shoot people. And then you go like, well, that, you know, none of those versions are kind of like, and I suppose when you get to the animated series of Batman, that's what they've really done. They've gone kind of like, this feels exactly,
yeah,
it's sort of like a fairy tale, romantic, art deco, really kind of like creepy and sort of
and it's got that thing. I think what works really well about that, it's just, it's all ages, and as much as if you're a kid it's not too scary, but it's also quite complex. I've thought it all through, and they're smart, like they've thought through all the origins and all the characters more. They've sort of taken it more
They did the same thing, didn't they? They took like Mr. Freeze. And yeah. Mr. Freeze was a B character. And
he didn't really have an origin, I think, or anything that was particularly. And then I went, well, let's invent one. Let's give him a motivation.
And they gave him one of the best origins. It's one of the best. I mean, that's the episode that won all the Emmys, wasn't it? And so I think that that's basically. That's sort of what Marvel have done, is they've gone, right, well, these characters aren't great. These are the second tier characters, right? And because I guess they couldn't afford to make a huge fuck off Spider-Man movie, and they didn't have the rights, and they didn't have the rights to Hulk either, right? So so they were just like, well, what have we got?
Yeah.
So then they were just like, well, we'll make this as, and also I thought that the changes that they made to Thor make sense. The changes that they've made to Iron Man, they've made it feel like, and also like Robert Downey Jr. Like half of that is the casting, or maybe three quarters of that is the casting.
Oh yeah, yeah, and really,
but also Robert Downey Jr. has adopted the Tony Stark, you know, character as his. As his own thing.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's sort of like he's basically playing Tony Stark in real life now. It's So, yeah, I really loved Infinity War, and then it came to this, and it started, and I couldn't remember anything about Infinity War, and I was just like, I really should have seen Captain Marvel, and I felt like, uh-oh. I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it more than, I'd say, by a fucking country mile, Infinity War is my favourite out of all of the films. And the others, I wouldn't even consider the word favourite. I would just go...
I think the first Avengers film is still better than all the other ones.
All the other Avengers films?
Mm. I think they all do something smart where... And I think I think that's what Marvel's strength is. I think all the decisions they make are smart. You go, that's a smart idea. That's how you do that. That's how you get away with that. But I think that... And this one as well. In fact, all the Avengers films, I'd say, maybe bar Age of Ultron, which I don't really remember anything about, have this thing where it's like they've got a lot to achieve in their running time and they sort of manage it. They kind of go, right, okay. It's like a tick sheet of, you got to do this, you got to do that, you got to do that. Whereas I think Avengers is a real, really impressive one where... It sort of fixes all the problems that were going on before. And one of the big problems that it absolutely fixes is casting Mark Ruffalo, who is just better than just about everyone else in them. Right. And he's always like, oh, he's like... And they nail Hulk for the first time. And they realise in The Avengers, it's like, oh, well, Hulk works better if he's not in his own film. Because if you make a Hulk film, the story always has to be kind of man and monster and someone going, oh, yeah. I wish I wasn't a monster. And it's just boring. And you see it, by the time that comes out, you've seen it dozens of times. If you make him if you make him a supporting character, he gets to still be the sort of fun Hulk smash thing. And you can get a little bit of that, but it's better as a supporting character where he can just interact with other people. And that's how they then use that character.
Yeah.
And I think more and more, as have gone on, these films sort of feel like... And now it feels like that's what they're doing with Thor, right? That they go, well, the Thor film's probably... aren't great, but if they make him like a comic character, they can kind of just fit him in other things.
Yeah,
it doesn't really, maybe it's not a great idea for a movie to carry a movie, except for,
well, he's done his trilogy, and then that's exactly how they used Robert Downey Jr. He did his trilogy. There's a few there's about three or four Marvel movies that I've actively thought were bad while I was watching them. I would say Iron Man 2, Doctor Strange, Age of Ultron, where I found them annoying and just like, oh my god, this is a bad film. But it's only a handful, and they have corrected them later. You know, in Infinity War, Doctor Strange was one of the better characters in it, but I thought in his own movie was just like, oh god, not another fucking, you know, and I just found the humour in that. Yeah.
I thought the other thing I felt about this new one is that I kept thinking, if you were 9 or 10 when Iron Man came out,
yeah,
and you went to see that, you go, I totally get how this film absolutely pays off.
Oh,
and like if you were that age, you would be so blown away by this.
Yeah, but I think that this absolutely worked in that sense. That so the whole reason of talking about, like, and I don't hate the Marvel movies. I like the idea. I like that they're there, and I find it quite frustrating that DC, you know, the arrogance. I was said to you the other day, but the arrogance of kind of like going,
it's mad.
They've taken 22 films to get to a point where they made a 3-hour movie that's got, you know, 50 main characters in it. And DC tries to do it in 3 films, and you go, you're absolute idiots. And and of course it was not going to work, and you got greedy, and these films should be shit.
Yeah, well, I think initially when they did, Iron Man made a lot of money. Thor, I'm pretty sure, didn't, and was a flop when it came out, right?
No.
And I think it was, oh, really?
I think it probably made enough.
Oh, yeah, but I think it has that thing where the Marvel films ended up almost like backwards engineering their own success. So by the time it gets to Avengers, people are like, well, I better get on top of these other ones. So it feels like everyone, a lot of those things got watched retrospectively and like
sure.
The kind of...
Well, I think also putting Easter eggs and teasers and stuff in all of them where you go, oh, there's a reference to Hawkeye's in Thor. And if you watch The Incredible Hulk, you can see Captain America's body in the snowbank. You know, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And if you look in the background of Tony Stark's thing, he's building Captain America's shield.
There's
stuff like that. But what I think is that if you were a kid and you'd watched all of these films, this film, you know, this culmination, in a way I don't want any more. It's finished it for me. I just think these are all great and they'll keep making them. But I don't really need any more. But what I think, if you were a kid growing up on them, these films would be like the most important.
Yes, of course. That's really nice.
I'm watching it with jaded adult eyes.
That's
where I'm
going,
like the lighting is just flat. And there's nothing as visually interesting in them as there was in, you know, Christopher Reeve's Superman and the first two Batman movies, where you just like, but the stories for them are shit. Or the stories for the Batman films are shit, and you just go back for the visuals. But I think that if I was a kid, this film would be incredible. As it is, I went to see it and I cried all the way through it, and it made me retroactively go, I do love that. It made me think very fondly on these characters that I've never been 100% in love with. I've gone, do you know what? I really do appreciate them, and I think that. Also, I think Kevin Feige, is it, or Kevin Feige,
or Feige, or
Kevin Feige, Kevin Feige. Kevin Feige. Kevin Feige. Kevin Feige. Kevin Feige.
Feige.
Feige. Feige.
Feige.
Kevin Feige. He's a genius. Like, the fact that he's done all this. It's like, you go, you know, there's no... It's kind of... it's just as artistically valid and important. Mm. Maybe not the films individually, but the fact that what he's done is he's tied all of these films together. You just like go, it's an absolute masterpiece.
I did. I mean, I thought that was kind of a funny thing at the end, which I'm sure is almost written by Kevin Feige. Oh, no. And it's not really a big spoiler, actually. But there's a sort of monologue at the end, isn't there? Where you get a monologue from Robert Downey Jr. going, 10 years ago, we never thought we could do this thing. We started off with, essentially going, when we made Iron Man,
we didn't imagine
it would get to this point.
It is tongue-in-cheek, though, I think. There was stuff that I didn't like about the film, and there's stuff, you know, as soon as you've introduced Captain Marvel into the universe, it's just kind of like, well, she's a bit of a selfish cunt, isn't she? There's loads of people that are dying, and she could have just stopped it all by, like, you know, going, actually, I'm just going to... This is more important for 2 seconds of my life. So there's that. There's this ultimate character, you know, ultimate superhero with unlimited superpowers. And
I think there's bits of the design in this which isn't very good. In that I think what works about them is they're such colourful characters, the Marvel heroes, and all based on 4-colour comics. So they're all primary coloured guys. And in this one, it's like, okay, they're going to have a big fight with some like brown shapes. And you go,
yeah.
What am I looking at here?
And also, that whole bit felt like the fight in Infinity War when between Doctor Strange and Tony Stark and Thanos, and on that planet, it just felt there was stuff that was sort of like, this feels like a repeat. Weird fat jokes all the way through it. Where you go, yes, okay, we're going to be really. what's the word? Diverse. Marvel's all about diversity now, except for fat people. Mm. And it's just kind of like, really? That's really weird. Considering, have you seen your fans?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like, what's with all the fat shaming and all the fat jokes? Mm. It was an odd choice. It's on the 22nd movie to suddenly go, well, what's left? Well, I guess we're going to start being mean about fat people. Like even one of the most beautiful scenes in it was between Thor and his mum.
Yes.
And it's just undercut with her saying, eat a salad. And you're just like, oh. So I was crying into my popcorn at that bit. My buttered popcorn. Play a song.
Yeah. I've done 50 minutes.
Gambler, and I'm a runner, but you knew that when you laid down. I'm a picture of ugly stories. I'm a killer and I'm a clown. Step into the street by sundown. Step into your last goodbye. You're a target just by living. $20 will make you die. I'll wear lace and I wear black leather. My hands are lightning up. Shots are clean, my shots are final, my shots are deadly, and when it's done, you're as stiff as my smoking barrel, you're as dead as a desert night, you're a notch and I'm a legend, you're at peace and
So you come to your daughter's been doing and stabbed herself in the vagina with a crucifix. So we've just been discussing the word cunting. So if we had to give the one word review for Avengers Endgame. 3, 2, 1, great. I thought it was a good ending. I really enjoyed it.
I think it's nice.
And do you know what? I think the way they handled Captain America, a quite boring character for a couple of films, the way they handled it, I just thought he was brilliant. I thought Chris Evans was incredible in this film.
I think.
And I know, really loved him.
I think you're right, actually. I think the...
I think that everything that they did with his character in this film was spot on, and I loved how they left that character.
Mm-hmm. The first Avenger might be my favourite Marvel film.
Sure, Joe Johnson. I mean, it's like when you go, it's weirdly, it's one of the only films out of that lot that has a very distinct personal look to it.
Yes.
It feels like a Joe Johnston film as much as a
Marvel
film.
It feels like The Rocketeer, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It feels basically in the same universe as that.
Yeah. it does, exactly. And, but with this Age of Ultron, there were moments of it Endgame. With this Endgame, it was just like, there were moments in it where when Paul Rudd is sort of like walking through San Francisco, it's kind of like, this is like just top tier science fiction.
He was very good, actually, and I'm not as big a fan of the Ant-Man films as some people are, but I thought he was actually really good in
this. I think he is really good. I like Paul Rudd, but like I think that they know what to do with that character. What they don't know anything to do with is Chris Pratt. He sort of turns up in both of the films, and it's kind of like he's much more likable in his own franchise, and then when he's in their franchise, it's kind of like he's always played off as a dick or an idiot or the guy that basically fucks them all over. And you go, I don't think his character would act like that in the Guardians of the Galaxy movies, but he does in...
They also did a thing at the end where they sort of end the thing with... seeing their autographs appearing on screen, like in Star Trek.
Star
Trek 6, is it? It's the last one, in it, where
Star Trek Undiscovered Country?
The one where they basically go, we're too old to do any more of these.
But is it Undiscovered Country?
I think
Country?
It's Undiscovered Country, right?
Yeah.
And they add that, and I went, oh, they did that in Star Trek. And you go, that's quite a nice... It was a nice thing in that.
I really like the way they did it, yeah, I thought it was really great. And then they basically set it up like going, well, these are going to be the guys that...
These ones are doing films now.
Right, so we're going to do... Oh, fucking hell. Just hold your fucking horses, you fucking hell. Do you know what it does, though? It makes me not want to do them. Oh, God. Sorry. Sorry if the listeners are a bit confused right now. Just being... forced into doing something I don't want to do by our producer.
Was it the track. Bottom ones or the old ones? Should we do the old ones first?
Okay, we've reviewed.
There you go.
Email. Hey, Nathaniel and Nick. I'm a new listener to this thing. My boyfriend got me into it. I said that wrong. You both sound hot and look okay. Love your conversations about food and places. Would you talk about Jim Caviezel at any point in the future?
Sure. Oh,
Heidi soon, 5 stars from me.
45 minutes next week.
You both sound hot and look okay. Love your conversations about food and places.
Is it the same? Have they got the right podcast? Food and place. We talk about food in different countries, don't we?
Would you talk about Jim Caviezel at any point in the future? I think Heidi Sue, 5 stars. Thanks for the 5 stars, Heidi, but you're a fucking idiot. Okay, Maggie Wiggle 26. No, we're not going to talk about Jim Caviezel.
I'll talk about Jim Caviezel. Oh,
my favourite Jim Caviezel movie. What's yours?
Frequency.
Mine's Escape Plan. Brilliant. So, good stuff, dudes. How are you doing, boys? I've been listening to Fan Club for quite a while now.
Hey, is this Maggie Wiggle? Yeah, that's how she speaks.
Hey, I'm Maggie Wiggle 26. How you doing, boys? I've been listening to Fan Club for quite a while now. It's a really great listen, and Nick and Nat are one of the best podcast duos in the country. Although I think Nick needs a bit of
positive attitude, please, Nick.
On life. I really can't make head nor tail of what your critique is there, Maggie Wiggle 26. Thanks for the 5 stars, but go fuck yourself. And this is the final one. A Brill Discovery. Jim Caviezel. No,
we're not reading that.
Why would you type that
Why
down?
Would you put that
Why would you type that down?
I might have read that without reading it.
Fucking hell. Greedo 5 President. That's funny, that's a play on Greedo 4 President. 22/04/2019, the year of our Lord. A Brill Discovery. I first heard, this is these are our iTunes reviews. Please, by all means, send your iTunes reviews in, but just fucking, double check them. Glance an eye over.
Put them through Grammarly first.
Just fucking, don't waste our time. A Brill Discovery. I first heard of Nick when he was in that Uncle program. I really liked that show, and it's sad that it hasn't been on in age. What? I really liked that show and is sad that it hasn't been on in ages. Turns out Nick has been keeping himself busy with this pretty sick podcast. Well,
I mean, this is Nick.
I never knew how big a nerd he was.
To be honest, Greedo 5 present, we wouldn't be able to live if that's all we...
I mean, if this is what I've been keeping myself busy with. And the rest, mate. Back on tour.
Imagine the super noodles we'd have to eat to survive on this.
So, I never knew how big a nerd he was. If I may ask a fan question, what is your favourite change from the Star Wars Special Editions? That's an interesting question. One for another time. So, what's your favourite change in the Star Wars fan changes?
I always liked the special editions. I had no problem with the thing of it at all. I think it was sort of later when you kind of go, oh, it is a bit of a shame, I suppose. But at the time, I was well up for it. My favourite bit, not a change so much, but I do like that weird bit of Solo. Steps on Jabba the Hutt's tail, and then a little bit of him just does his juddery thing comes up for a second,
and then Jabba the Hutt goes, "Wow!" My favorite change, and they've changed it many times in almost every version, is the bit when Ben Kenobi comes out for the first time, and he's scaring away the sand people. And he does an impression of a crate dragon, and eventually they changed it in almost every version. And the latest one is he comes from behind a rock and he goes,
there's also now, if you watch the version of it now, is the in the second one where it's got like Boba Fett in it, they've given him like the voice of Tamura Morrison.
Yeah.
So it's like Darth Vader says something to him and he's like, "You're all right, mate." So then you go, "What? What?" "You'll just go and do that in a minute, mate." And it's like, What are you doing?
I'm struggling to think of any of the changes that I really like. I think that the best changes that they made were just tarting up the spaceship effects.
Yeah.
Those are the best changes. That's it. They kept doing weird things with the change. Like when Luke falls... Empire Strikes Back looked the nicest at the cinema in 97, where they put extra Cloud City shots in. And you go, oh, I like all this.
Yeah.
But that was like the one where they were embellishing it more, whereas the other ones were like, we've actually cut scenes out and now we're adding them in. Mm. Friends of Ringo Ishikawa. I have been a fan of Friends of Ringo Ishikawa on the Switch. I like the lo-fi hip-hop soundtrack and Double Dragon-like gameplay.
Okay.
Oh, that's great. Thank you, M. at Hutchinson. Oliver Reed Smith at Oliver Reed Smith. I watched WrestleMania this week.
It was surprisingly good.
I've been a fan of. Oh.
Is that a thing people have been doing? Did we say this? There's like a hashtag.
Yeah, I've been a fan of. That's nice.
Oh, there you go.
Claire Louise Taylor. Hashtag fan club. Hashtag I've been a fan of Mr. Brooks, the Kevin Costner film, after you chatted about him last week. Mr. Brooks is a weird film, isn't it? I quite like that.
I've not seen it.
Kevin Costner plays a serial killer. Okay. And Dane...
Bowers?
Dane Cook. Oh. Plays the detective that's hunting him down. It's good. It should have been Bowers. It should have been Dane Bowers. Brilliant. So if you're listening and you want to write in and say what you've been a fan of this week, hashtag fan club, hashtag I've been a fan of, and let us know what you've been a fan of. This week, it sounds like more of a radio show than it has any other week.
Yeah, we should start again.
I think we're tired. it's beginning to sound a little bit too slick. But, you know, what are you going to do about it? So we're going to play a song and then we're going to get a guest in. What's the... what's your song?
Was it Southern Girls, is it?
Ah, here we go. And we're back. And, I've lost my headphones. So here are my headphones. Here are my headphones. I haven't switched on your microphone yet. And we're back in the studio. I like that song a lot, Nat.
So we're back
in the studio, and we're joined now by actor Ingrid Oliver.
Hi.
Actor and comedian.
I was waiting for the description. Pause there. You weren't sure.
Well, we get a lot of so-called comedians and I'm always in disbelief of the arrogance that they actually go, yeah, I'm a comedian.
Oh, I'm definitely not. I'm a comedy actor.
There you go. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you.
What would you like to plug?
Oh, am I really loud, or I just sound loud?
In your ears?
No, it's fine. Don't worry about it.
Absolutely normal.
Because I've been doing theatre, so I project.
Sure, right, of course.
What I'm plugging is The Hustle.
I've seen it on the side of buses.
Yeah, so have I. I saw it yesterday.
That's exciting, isn't it?
My first time seeing a film, I'm in loads of films. My first time seeing a film, I'm on the side of the bus. It's the first film I've been in, so it's the first time I've seen it.
Oh, is it your first ever film?
Actually, no, I was in Angus Thongs and Perfect Snogging.
Oh, yeah.
Of course you were.
That doesn't count.
How dare you? I was a very small part. I was a lesbian PE teacher who was weirdly was quite creepy towards the 14-year-old
girls. Wouldn't happen now, probably. Probably wouldn't.
No, it's too PC gone mad now, isn't it? Of course, you can't get away with any of that stuff. But in The Hustle, which is a very good, very funny film, coming out next week. Which is a remake of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Which is a remake of Bedtime Story.
Which had Marlon Brando and David Niven in it. Yeah.
Yes, Marlon Brando and David Niven. And the most memorable thing about Dirty Rotten Scoundrels is the Ruprecht scene, is it?
Yes.
And you go, oh, Steve Martin is a comedy genius.
Yes.
Probably wouldn't get away with that performance in 2019, but
sure.
It's comedy genius. And then when you watch Bedtime Story, it's an exact copy of Marlon Brando's performance.
Is it really?
Marlon Brando does Ruprecht like exactly the same as Steve Martin. You go, oh, this is Steve Martin, and it's not. Marlon Brando did it first.
I did not
it's
know
incredible.
That. Incredible. Oh, I have to watch that now.
A good film.
I had no idea Bedtime Story existed until I saw a trailer for it. And I was watching it, and my mind was blown at this, like watching the trailer essentially for an old Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Yeah,
I was like, what is going on?
So you've seen The Hustle?
Yes, I have.
So if you had to rank The Hustle between Bedtime Story, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, and The Hustle, which one? Where would you rank
number
it?
Number one. Bearing in mind I've not seen Bedtime Story.
Sure.
Also, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels is one of my favourite comedy films. So this is quite hard for me. But I'm in The Hustle, so
did
therefore...
Did you see Dirty Rotten Scoundrels when it was on stage?
I did not. Who was in that?
Rufus Hound, of course.
Oh, was it? Oh, yes, that rings a bell, actually. Of course. What does that mean?
Of course.
Of course.
So I remember that. No, I didn't
He's
see
in
it.
Them all.
the Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, what I've had great pleasure in people who have interviewed me for it, and they're like, so have you seen the original? And what they mean is, have you seen the 1988?
What, Bedtime Story?
And I go, actually. As though I'm a woman, so I probably wouldn't have seen like a brilliant comedy film with two men in it from the 80s. And I was like, well, I've seen it many times. But actually, I think you'll find it's not the original. Actually, the original.
I like that, and I hate people.
Yes.
So it's like this is sounds like a delicious anecdote. I don't like the use of the word delicious out of the context of food.
You like to use the word delicious?
No, I don't.
Oh, you
I don't
like...
hate it.
Okay.
I was in the theatre yesterday, and the performances were delicious. Although I have used it earlier today.
I don't think I've ever heard anyone use that word in that context.
My venue is delicious.
Who does that?
No, exactly. The sort of people that you try and get out of those conversations with as soon as possible. Your new film is delicious. I haven't seen it.
It is, though. It's truly delicious.
So tell us about
it. Who are you in
it? Who's in it? Who's in it?
Oh, yeah, we should do that.
Sure.
So you were in a movie that was made in 2019.
Correct.
When did you finish on it?
Oh, no, it was made 2018. Hmm. Where are we now? 2019.
Yes.
Yeah, we finished it in 2018. And then... So it stars Anne Hathaway.
Anne Hathaway.
The Oscar winner Anne Hathaway. And Rebel Wilson. Two very funny ladies. and I play basically Anton Rogers' part, who is the French sort of policeman who's a bit bent.
Who's Anton Rogers?
He plays the sort of corrupt. He's the right hand. I'm basically Anne Hathaway's right hand woman.
Yeah,
but who's Anton Rogers?
Oh, who's Anton Rogers?
Fresh Fields.
May to December.
May to December. Yeah, right. That's what I thought. He was obviously he played the chief inspector in Son of Pink Panther, starring Roberto Benigni.
Did he?
Yes. Of course he did, Anton Rogers. I just needed that little nudge over the hill to remember. But May to December. What a series.
That was a great series.
He was 70, she was 17. A beautiful romance. So you're playing the Anton Rogers character.
Yeah, so I do a sort of... because I auditioned for it and I didn't think it had gone that well.
Sure.
And because I'm quite... I was like, no, I'm going to do a real... Because I did languages at university. Mm. So I pride myself on getting things right grammatically and accent-wise. So I did a very straight French accent. And I think that, looking back at the Anton Rogers, it's all very big.
Yes.
And I think generally when non-French people or do a French accent, it's all quite Inspector Clouseau. Yeah.
That was Steve Martin doing Inspector Clouseau. Only funny bit in the whole film.
Did Steve Martin do Inspector Clouseau as well?
The Pink Panther.
Hang on.
Steve Martin did...
I only remember the Peter Sellers ones. So...
Well, not only did Peter Sellers... Was Peter Sellers not the only Inspector Clouseau? Who was the other guy? It was Alan Arkin.
Alan Arkin.
That... I saw that on Netflix yesterday for the first time.
The Alan Arkin?
I did not know. I didn't watch it, but I saw the trailer. I was like, oh my God, Alan Arkin was...
Inspector Clouseau. For one film.
So who's there been? Clouseau, Martin, Steve Martin...
Steve Martin did two Pink Panther movies.
Quite modern ones, like a few years ago.
And there's a bit when he can't say hamburger. He's going, hamburger! And I went to see it in Watford in a packed cinema and no one laughed for the entire film. And then he goes, hamburger! And I laugh out loud and I'm immediately embarrassed by the fact that I'm the only person who's laughed in this comedy. Just like,
Can I ask you a question? Do you find fart jokes funny?
No.
Do you find fart jokes funny?
No.
Oh, you don't? Are you not lying?
No, I'm not lying.
Good. Is he lying?
I don't know. No, I find them quite funny.
Oh, do you find them funny?
I actively removed them from Uncle because I was just like, we're better than these guys.
That's the thing, because I feel like the people who laugh at comedy French accents are the same people that laugh at fart jokes, but you've just disproved that theory.
They're not.
You're an anomaly.
They're not.
You're unique. Special.
I don't think I am unique. I think that's just... I'm sure there is a Venn diagram of the crossover, but...
Because I don't like fart jokes. I just don't. I'm half German. I don't... for me, a body is a beautiful thing. It's all very natural. Why are we laughing at bodily functions? I'm quite po-faced about it.
Oh, really? I just pretend that
I don't like a cartoon fart thing. I like a fart joke where it appears like someone shat themselves or something.
Oh, like shart.
I think that's quite funny. Yeah. But I don't like a kind of raspberry kind of level fart joke. So but I quite like a sort of, I think there's a median of it that I find funny.
You've got a scale.
Yeah. There's a frequency where I'm like, that's funny.
I think that, if it's just someone that's walking onto a screen farting, then that's not. But I think in order to appreciate it, there has to be a certain element of human tragedy.
Mm. Absolutely.
So the fact that there were real stakes involved.
If it's real,
There was a fart joke in Malcolm in the Middle where the mum bent over. I think they were having a family argument and the mum bent over and accidentally farted. And then they all laugh, but she's humiliated.
Yes.
And you go, there was... the human story there.
Yes.
How beautiful.
Mm-hmm. The thing I'm thinking of...
It's a bit in Dumb and Dumber when he shits... when he's in the toilet and you go, this is amazing.
I remember seeing a filmed insert on a music... might have been something like SMTV or something.
We're just joined in the studio by Ingrid Oliver and we're discussing fart jokes. Favourite fart jokes. If you've got any favourite fart jokes, by all means, write in to...
I've been a fan of. Hashtag,
I've got a fart for you.
Yeah, considering I hate them... Well, I'm really talking about them a lot.
I really hate acknowledging... Yeah, anyway.
So I saw a filmed insert with the band McFly, and they're in a limo or something chatting, and one of them farted, it just really made me laugh.
No.
I couldn't tell whether it was accidental or they knew that was happening.
Well, and Bridesmaids, that scene in Bridesmaids, where they all shit themselves. Like, they go to the wedding shop.
Mm. You didn't find that funny?
No.
Oh, in fact, it was funny.
I did a really...
Because
it's
was
not.
Human,
it wasn't objectively funny.
There was human was, tragedy involved.
No, it wasn't human tragedy. It was played it was
human
for shit jokes.
Drama.
I literally...
The bit when she walks across the street and she collapses and shits herself and you go, she's just shat in
I think I sat
dress.
There. I think I watched it on the airplane. I sat there with my
Spoiler
arms crossed...
Alert.
Shaking my head, sadly.
Well, watching it in a plane isn't the best fucking environment to do it.
I think it's the best.
The only thing that I can relate to is that I was on a plane once. You know, if the closest a plane was like to a, like a cinema experience. Mm. So I was on a plane once, and everyone was watching the Amy Winehouse documentary, and no one was laughing. That's the closest a plane has been like to
don't,
being.
I don't
in
think
the
it was
cinema.
Meant to be a comedy.
Exactly.
No one is laughing.
Exactly.
Oh,
so
good,
that's the closest to a cinematic reaction. You can't watch like a comedy that's been edited. They've
I
taken all the swearing out.
I think watching films on planes, I will enjoy them 100%
I don't
more.
Give a fuck about anyone's holidays. They land and I say, what was the food like and what were the films on the plane?
Yeah.
And then they've done it and I'm just like, okay, I don't need to know anything more.
Yeah. I will. Hello. Unprofessional.
I'm not.
yeah, but when you say I'm professional, can you face the camera a bit more, please? We didn't quite get you.
I just did a look
it's
down the lens.
Always a bigger fish.
There we go.
Oh, it's a bigger fish. That's the nerdiest thing I've said. And of course, that's a direct quote from Qui-Gon Jinn from Phantom of Menace. So, carry on.
I can't carry on. Not after
sorry,
that.
No, we were talking about French accents before that.
Well, the digression was, yes. I played quite a straight French accent.
And was that what was wanted?
But
I quite
they're not
like
looking
that.
For a direct replacement of Herbert Lombard, are they? What was his name?
From hang on, Anton
Rogers.
Rogers.
Anton Rogers.
Herbert Lom. Isn't it Lom? Herbert Lom.
Yeah, I created...
Lombert, like Pombert.
Like Lambert, like Christophe.
So, basically, I wasn't doing Gordon Kay. I was doing more, you know, European indie cinema. Well, I think I got the job. Yeah, so I think it must have been. I don't know if they did want it when it by the time we finished with it. But
I think they probably, what happens is people watch the original and they go in and then they try and replicate that, maybe. If it's already based on a pre-existing performance, then I think what they probably were looking for is something different.
Right. Well, and they got it.
Is it, because one of the things that confuse me about this, right, about this remake, is it a straight gender swap of the original?
Yes, pretty much.
Because
here we go. Come on.
Well, no, I'm up for watching it.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the trailer.
Yeah.
I'm gonna see it.
Okay.
Right. I'm already on board.
Great.
Right. I'm an audience member. I'm a paying customer. I'll pay for it. Right. Right. But in these times, right. Well, no, I suppose if people haven't seen the original, I'm just going to talk specifically about the ending of the Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think I know where you're going.
I know you're going. What you're saying is that within the context of women, Me Too and like all that stuff.
If it's like a gender reversal,
I know
kind of
saying.
Like we need to get women more parts, that's great. But in the original, or in the remake of the original, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, it's all about how these two guys get played by a woman.
Yeah. But
so
I think
it is already kind of like, although it's...
But what you're watching is two men on screen for 2 hours or an hour and a half.
Sure.
So, and the way... We,
although
and that
Glenn,
was an issue.
Glenn Headley's in it quite a lot. Mm. She's
about
definitely the third lead.
Yeah, from about halfway through. I think she's amazing in it. But that was definitely a question.
What happened with Glenn Headley?
I don't know, she was good in everything.
She was good in...
What else was she in?
She was in Dick Tracy.
Dick Tracy.
Oh, my God, yeah. Actually, I didn't...
Oh, she died.
Did she?
She died recently, though.
Oh, no.
Oh.
She died a couple of years ago.
Oh, no, how sad. She was brilliant.
But she had, like, a whole run in, like, the early 90s. Yeah, a couple of years ago, 2017.
Right. Oh, well, that's...
So that's still... I mean, it's sad that she died. People die. Dick Tracy was 1990. You can't, like, say, well, she made Dick Tracy. That was an absolute banger. Then what
Dick
happened?
Tracy.
She died 27 years later.
She did other stuff. She did loads of other stuff. I'm sure she did in that gap. But we talked...
I'm just saying that it was a cheap stunt to say she died when she died 27 years after the films that we're talking about. Tell you what, The Scoundrels was 88. Fucking hell.
I thought it was 87. Don't know.
Is it 80? I think. Is it 88? I think it's 88. Is it 88?
So no.
Oh, we'll go. We'll find out. 88.
Does it matter? 88. Does it matter? I said 88. Yes. Making Mr. Right. Was that the one with fucking John Malkovich in it, where she designs a robot, a sex robot?
As with John Malkovich as a sex robot.
Yeah, he's got a wig on. It's Purple Rose of Cairo.
See, that would have been a gender swap of Weird Science.
She didn't do much,
right?
Immortal Thoughts.
No.
It could be. Yeah, that would make sense.
That would make, well,
but then it would be like, instead you've got, it should be like a really sort of handsome man though, shouldn't it?
Well, maybe he was. I mean, he was handsome.
Well, John Malkovich with a wig on. It's like,
oh, of course, she was in Sergeant Bilko with Steve Martin.
Right.
Yes, yes.
You might be at this point thinking, fucking hell, show has no structure.
No, no.
And it's,
what I'm actually thinking is, you're like my boyfriend, who basically, when we're at dinner or anything, and then any kind of thing comes up that he needs fact-checking, is he's then on his phone for the rest of the meal.
Am I on my phone? No,
you're on a computer.
That she's,
and I'm doing the same thing that I do with my, I'm staring at you, just hoping you're going to look up and catch my eye and interact with me as a human being.
Mortal Thoughts, of course.
For the listeners, he's now looking away again and down at his computer.
Mr. Holland's Opus, she's in.
Oh, God. I used to think Mr. Holland's Opus was about a music teacher with a drug addiction, but I realised that I got the word opus computer with opium. But imagine Mr. Holland's Opium. Oh, with Dickie Dreyfuss. We watch the making of Jaws and they're like, well, Richard. And then the next person's got an anecdote. Well, you know, Rick. Old Ricky. Old Dick. Dickie. it's something that you've got to see to believe. So, we're going to need to get a bigger boat.
I went to university with Tom Shaw's... Sorry, that was the name of my friend. With Robert Shaw's son.
Oh.
It was really tragic.
Tom.
I know. But it was because he didn't really know his dad that well.
Bobby. He didn't know Bobby.
Because he died when my friend was quite young. But it's amazing that he's got all these films. All he's got of his dad is like the best films ever made.
Yes, yeah.
And that's what he knows of him.
And From Russia with Love.
Which is also, I mean, it's.
It's good. It's not the
best
one.
It's not bad.
Though,
it's not bad.
It's not Goldfinger.
Dr. No
is not great.
Dr. No's not great.
I think From Russia with Love is good. It's got a good song.
Oh, yeah, but it was obviously the second James Bond film, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then it really came together with the third one, Goldfinger. So, come on, guys.
That's a good song.
Robert Shaw was also in The Sting, wasn't he?
He was in The Sting, which is also, yes, The Sting, Jaws, and what was the other one you said? Another one that we just said. I can't remember. Anyway,
Jaws.
James Bond.
From Russia
with
Love.
Jaws and The Sting. Which are two of the most phenomenal films.
What else was... this is not the point of the show, to just get someone else to Google stuff for you, put it on a screen, and then you just go through there. Although, you know, this is a very fluid conversation where it's just gone from one thing to another thing. We're just listing stuff.
I know.
It's so good to have you in.
Thank you. Eye contact. This is what I'm here for. Come on.
Well, I mean, you're in a movie.
Yeah.
Is there something Doctor Who-ish happening?
Is there something Doctor Who-ish happening? No.
What, now?
Didn't you...
Right now?
I saw on Twitter that you retweeted something.
Oh, I know, I do. That's the audiobooks. There's a whole company dedicated to employing people who have been in Doctor Who's, including doctors, and then they write these actually really good stories, audio stories.
From their point of view?
Yeah, there's a whole different sets of them. There's like a Paul McGann's doctor or Sylvester McCoy's doctor and all the original sort of companions and stuff.
Who was your doctor?
My doctor, Peter Capaldi, was my doctor in the show.
When you were growing up?
When I was growing up. It was Peter Davison.
Yeah, me too.
Was it?
I met him recently.
I thought you were saying your doctor growing up was Peter Capaldi, and I was going, come on.
Yeah.
No, you're fooling no one.
He's only 12. Yeah. How was that, meeting Peter?
Well, it was brilliant. He was. We were at a reading. And I saw him and I said, because I'm named after his character from All Creatures Great and Small.
Tristan.
It's my middle name.
Really?
Isn't it?
I went over to him and I said, oh, I'm named after your character, but also you are my doctor. But I said it within earshot of Peter Capaldi. It was a bit like, you're Malcolm Tucker.
Oh my God, he really. I've been watching that again. I've been watching all three series, there's four. And up until last night, I got to the end of Series 3. It's incredible.
It is really great.
It's one of my favourite shows.
Chris Addison directed The Hustle. That's Fan Club.
There we go.
Did he now?
Yeah, Chris Addison directed The Hustle. Yeah.
I've just moved house and
Oh, where have you moved to?
Just down the road.
Oh, nice.
I used to be 5 minutes away from the studio, but now I'm 10.
Oh, that's awful.
That's a bit difficult to deal with.
And have you been on time since?
I haven't been on time once since. It really does have a knock-on effect.
10 minutes. 10 minutes up
there. We should have thought about that when I moved. Anyway, so I was moving and I moved a book, and behind the book was a little picture of a 22-year-old Chris Addison that he had framed. We did a TV series called Show and Tell. That was like one of my first bits of TV. Maybe it was my second thing that I'd done after Russell Howard. And we got framed pictures of Chris Addison as a gift because he was the host. And it was just such a shock to see. He looks so young.
He does. Well, he still does.
He still does look young, doesn't he? But this, he's got absolutely, it's almost like it's a soft focus lens. He's got like Vaseline all over it. And his face is so angelic.
He's still, I mean, he's in his 40s now, but he's not, he looks young. I hate him. Yeah, and he directed that.
So he's
such a lovely man. I mean, there's no question about it. I think because
I'm just talking about aesthetics, just looks wise.
Oh, looks
I mean,
wise.
I haven't met him in a long time, but I couldn't judge his personality and how it's been warped by the Hollywood system. But what I can say is that looks wise, he's a beautiful man.
On Tinder, out of 10, what would you?
On Tinder, out of 10, I would give him 9 Tinders.
9 Tinders, bloody hell.
That's pretty good.
And you're right, that's right. Yeah. He directed Veep. Because he directed The Thick of It, I think, some episodes of that. Mm-hmm. And then he went on and did Veep. And so this was his first big feature film. So, could be quite daunting, but he's a very nice man. And I think that, I don't know if you work with people who are just assholes. And then thing. Is that normally you? You're like, yeah, yeah.
No. It's weird, isn't it?
I've never
worked with a single cunt. It's fine. I think there's one on every project.
Yeah, and it affects the whole
thing.
Hang
on, it's usually just me and you doing this show. But,
I've got bad news now.
I was going to say that. I think you very much. No, you don't. You seem lovely. You seem lovely. But he's. And when the director is a good person, then everyone is also behaves
trickles
themselves.
Down. Did it feel down. Like he had a lot on his shoulders then? Were you aware of him? Was he very super professional? Because you'd think it must have been like, oh, God, I'm doing I'm doing a Hollywood movie.
I mean, yes. Yes, definitely. Because, he's the one that has to make decisions. Mm-hmm. And everyone goes to him and goes, what do you want? And you have to make a choice. But also everyone working on it was very good as well. So
they're at the top of their game.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And they all know that they know what film they're making, don't they?
Listen, Nick, when you're working on an MGM studio film...
Wow.
Where is that?
Where's what? MGM's.
Where did you have to travel to? Were you filming in England, weren't you?
Like, it was like Shepperton. Yeah, we were filming in England. Yeah, it was like Pinewood, Shepperton. There's a few places. But yeah, you know the difference on the money on a film like that and a film and like, you know.
So filmed in the UK, but you've got proper dinners and things.
Oh my God.
Proper catering.
What was the catering like?
The catering, I can't remember.
Yeah, you can.
I didn't really eat during art because it's like on no carbs. But I did get a welcome on my first day. I walked into my trailer and
salmon.
Basically yes.
What?
I had a Fortnum & Mason's hamper stuffed with the most amazing wines, cheeses, and fishes and meats known to man.
Oh, that's nice.
And I was like, this is it. I only ever want to work on jobs where I get free stuff now.
Have a word with your agent.
Yeah.
I'll only do big Hollywood films from now on.
Where I get free
that's
stuff.
I'd do that. I always get free stuff. I got a stapler on the last one.
Did you?
Yeah. Popped in my pocket.
Staples in it?
Yes.
Well, it's still free, isn't
well,
it?
Well, some staples, half filled.
Oh, that's all right.
But the reluctant landlord will be missing that.
I haven't seen that yet. I want to see it.
No one's seen it.
No, I want to. What are you? You're not. Is Romesh the reluctant landlord?
Yeah, we had to drag him kicking and screaming some days. Yes, no, he is. Yeah.
He is.
Yeah, it's on Sky.
Yeah.
The most people that you bump into say, I haven't seen it. I don't have Sky. And you go, oh, yeah, it's great.
Oh, no, I do have Sky.
no, that's all right. Game of Thrones is on again at the moment, isn't it? So, got around through that. It's fine. Well, let's not do this.
No. We can't. We can't because I've not watched it since series four.
I've not seen The Hustle, though, and we've managed to talk for 31 minutes.
I tell you what, here's something that I'm sure you'll confirm, and it's a theory I base it. And it's something that's come up before on this. Anne Hathaway always seems really lovely, but seems to have a reputation of people being like, oh, Anne Hathaway. And I don't understand it. I always think she's really good in everything.
Wasn't she married to Shakespeare at one point?
I had friends.
I bet she gets that a lot.
Do you know what? I had friends text me.
But if you were married to the most famous playwright of all time and you haven't aged a day, then fucking hell, you would get asked about it.
My friend Sophie. Do you know Sophie Black? My friend Sophie sent a text. She was like, ask her. I was like, I'm not gonna ask her that. Whether she's married to Shakespeare, because she gets that, I think, all the time.
Does she? She should have changed her name.
Actually, from Americans, but that was a bit me. That was like saying Americans don't know. I didn't
think about
know.
How Jane Seymour feels. She's been around a lot longer.
Of course.
Mm. Yeah, she's another.
I
very
just
beautiful.
Want to talk about Dr. Quinn.
She's another very beautiful woman, Jane Seymour. Don't you think?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
She was like.
She was the like, wedding why? Crashes. Oh, forget about it. Yes, please.
It's a great film.
It's a great fucking movie.
What were we talking about?
Anne Hathaway's reputation. I love her.
So do I. I think I don't get it.
She's a very nice lady.
Yeah,
she would, between takes at one point, she started singing Les Mis. And I love Les Mis. It's one of my favourite musicals.
Not the
I've
film,
seen it like
obviously.
Five times. I've seen the play five times.
Not the Anne Hathaway film, but.
She won an Oscar for it.
I stole a loaf of bread.
2, 4, 6, 0,
haven't
one.
We got that as a fucking thing? Which number is it? Fucking. Bear with me.
I mean, this is the show. This is the show.
This
I'm afraid.
It was just a loaf of bread, which is sort of ridiculous.
Oh, it's not there. It's not there.
That's applause for live for the live audience that's here. Talking about applause.
WTF.
WTF. Oh.
And when we edit this show, this will just. There we go.
It wasn't worth it.
Who's singing that?
That's me.
Is it?
Yeah. Oh. I stole a loaf of bread. What I love most about that performance is how seriously Hugh Jackman is taking that one line. I mean, I know there's a lot of.
I mean, it does the heavy lifting. It sets up the whole premise
of the
thing.
But you really do believe that he did steal a load of bread. But you, basically, Hugh Jackman is channeling the fact that he's not allowed carbs.
Do you know what?
That's why he's so sad about it.
I'm going to LA next week for the premiere of The Hustle, and I haven't eaten carbs. I didn't. I was like, I've got 3 weeks. I need to be drastic now. I'm going to cut out all sugar, bread, alcohol.
How's that going?
I cut it out for a week, religiously. I ate vegetables and protein. I put on 4 pounds.
Yeah, but that'd be muscle.
Will it? Either way, I was like,
the
fuck
muscle.
This. I'm back on. I mean, fuck it. Life's too short.
Yeah.
So it's not like I'm, and I can't like halve my size in 2 weeks. So what's the point? I had a little cream egg last night.
Of course you did.
A little of what you fancy does you good, isn't it? I've always.
Do you like a cream egg?
Oh, I love a cream egg.
Absolutely delicious.
Yeah.
You won't have them, will you? He doesn't like any eggs, even chocolate eggs. He's frightened of them.
I'm not frightened of them.
He's frightened of them.
I'm not frightened of them.
You sound quite defensive, I'll be honest.
Well, I'm not frightened of them. I don't know where the frightened thing comes from. I find that a bit.
What is it about eggs you don't like?
You sort of freak out if you talk about eggs.
Whenever anything smells bad, you go, fucking hell. And then someone's farted and you go, that smells like that dinner that you're eating, doesn't it?
There's nothing. Sulfur.
Yeah, it's nothing great that, sometimes someone will be cooking eggs and then you walk in and you go, somebody farted. And you go, why would anybody want to...
My brother was telling me, Oprah Winfrey did that thing where she gave all her audience a car.
Yeah.
And she did that thing, look under your seats, they've all got car keys. It's like, you've got a car. Last week over Easter on The Right Stuff with Jeremy Vine on Channel 5, they've got an audience of maybe like 15 people that watch The Right Stuff. And on Good Friday, they said, guys, look under your chair. And they looked under the chair. And they go, you've got an Easter egg.
You've got an egg.
And they said, you've got an egg. But then they went, but actually, you haven't all got an Easter egg. Some of you have got an Easter egg, but not
Channel 5.
Not everyone.
Channel 5, innit? That's what can you expect? Oh, I love the right. Well, no, it's not the right stuff, is it?
It's still the right stuff, I think, but with Jeremy Vine.
Is it?
I don't wonder if it still has a W.
I don't think it is the right stuff.
Is it not?
I don't know. I could be. Actually, I could be.
The right Vine thing. Stuff. It's called
I'm
now.
I'm finding this as a very difficult episode to get my head around because we've.
So imagine how Ingrid feels.
What's Rebel Wilson like?
What's Rebel Wilson like? She's very funny.
Anna Hathaway's nice.
Yeah.
Officially, you heard it here first.
What do you want to say?
I want you to say
they
that.
They both went to strip clubs.
I always love it when you get a car.
Yeah.
And you get in and they say, "Oh, I was driving that Ellen Mirren the other week," and you go, "Oh, what was she like?" She goes, "Lovely." And you go,
"Yes."
Mm.
Yeah, you heard
like those nicer stories.
Yeah, there you go. Well, they're not great stories, but they're nice.
That's a terrible story because that's not going to get you to Croydon and back. What you need is you go, oh, she was a right fucking cunt. Fucking never gets back. I mean, the stories I heard about some people.
Have
my
you ever
word.
Sat in a car and the driver's really like properly gone into detail about another actor's behaviour?
Yeah.
And I always think, obviously I love it, but also I'm like, oh, I don't think you should be telling me that.
Well, you just worry about what they're going to say about you.
Well, exactly.
But it's normally the ones when they go, "Oh, she was lovely. She was a bit of a cold fish throughout the journey, but then at the end of the job, she got me a £3,000 watch." And you go, "Well, you'll be getting none of that from me."
No,
I can see where you're going with this. But you'll be getting none of that from me. Yeah, you do think that, but then you also just... The one that I really hate is, we had that comedian in the other day. He was a funny guy. He was really funny. He was funny. No, he was just effortlessly funny. And then you're just there going, just take me to the fucking set, mate.
Do you tend to have the same drivers every day?
You can do, yeah.
Okay. Depends what job you're on.
Yeah, you can do.
I'm mainly getting Ubers on Reluctant Landlord. So introduce your song.
Oh, yeah. Going straight into it. Right, okay. So this song, how much do you want? Can I give a bit of backstory?
Yes, please.
Yeah, sure.
So the song is by New Kids on the Block.
NKOTB.
Thank you. Yeah. And it's one of their less well-known ones. But actually, within the song, it encapsulates their entire journey as a band, the experience of me as a fan. Please enjoy.
Tonight.
Nick and Nat's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
Right, but Chris's brother's subhuman scum. So let's go back to...
I enjoyed that, by the way.
Oh, that's really great. Nick is on the block.
It wasn't mad in the production, but it was. You're right. It starts off quite sort of Spanish-y.
Yeah.
And then goes very Beatles-y.
It's a bit like...
They reference their own songs.
It's a bit like they said, we're coming to the end of our career. Let's clear out our desks. Oh, we've got these fragments of about 10 songs. Let's put them together in one. Loved it.
And genius was born, yeah.
The right stuff is just called Jeremy Vine now.
Sorry, it is just called Jeremy. I thought it was, yeah. I used to love the right stuff. Anyway.
So you're a big fan. Are we going to do the actual show that we've said that we were going
to
do?
I'd like to.
Oh, yeah.
So what are you a fan of, Ingrid?
Thanks for asking, Nick.
This is, do you want you to know? I want you to know, you're a fan club first. You're the first person... that we've ever asked what they're a fan of on the show.
That can't be true.
We never get to it.
Really? Oh, I feel that's not a good thing. It I feel like we've
thing.
Run out of natural
we
conversation.
We haven't run out of natural conversation. Okay. The conversation we were having was so confusing to me that I normally like to tie up all the threads, but I just think we'll abandon that.
I'm just going to go straight into it then, without further ado. I'm a fan
Adieu.
Of...
Is this the French accent that you're doing for the...
I was going to say...
Without further adieu.
Adieu. To you and you. And adieu.
Could you get us into a film? Just make that happen?
I doubt it.
Okay. It's worth asking.
I don't have that sort of power. My fan club. My thing.
Yes.
Detectives. There we go.
You just like detectives
Fictional
in
detectives.
Fictional detectives.
We're talking television. Not really film one so much. Television series.
Okay,
and books. I grew up very young reading Agatha Christie, Sherlock Holmes. That was my first.
Yeah.
Hardy Boys.
Yeah.
A lot of that. And then I went into Columbo, your Magnum PI.
Oh, yeah.
Ironside.
Yeah.
And now anything like that, yeah. I consume it.
So yeah. Who did you watch the Joan Hicks and Miss Marples? Do you remember those?
Yes, of course, yeah. Yeah, they were great.
But are you more into the American detectives then? US detectives?
I like a Scandinavian detective.
Oh, all different.
They're all different. I prefer Scandinavian / British. Because I've watched probably most episodes of Midsummer Murders, Death in Paradise, Shakespeare and Hathaway.
Have you ever done a Midsummer Murders?
No, Shakespeare and Hathaway.
Shakespeare and Hathaway.
Is she in it?
Is she in a lunchtime BBC detective series? Sadly, no, she's not.
Well, she may have filmed it hoping that it would be like on in the evening.
And then they'll do that, the Bee, won't they? They'll tell you one thing and they'll bloody put it out another slot.
They bumped it. It happens to the best one, Chris Barry, Prince Among Men. That very much started on a Thursday 9 o'clock slot, and by the second week it was on Sunday lunchtime.
Is that true?
Prince Among Men.
Yeah, it did, I think. Oh, moved it around.
Gary Prince. Is that his name?
That's with Mark Benton and Joe, I can't even say it, Joe Joyner.
Joe
Joyner. She's lovely. Well, I don't know, I've never met her, but I've heard.
To be honest, she'd been on set for 3 days before I'd got there. So when I got there, I was very much, who the fuck is this?
No, she was
to me.
Fair enough.
I was very delighted because I'd obviously seen her picture on the wall in the makeup truck for, you know, six weeks.
Was this an episode of Shakespeare and Hathaway?
No.
You could do a 17th century detective show. That'd be good. Like an Elizabethan detective.
Cad File. Yes. Do you remember Cad File with Derek Jacobi? Yeah.
Cad File.
Say
it with me. Cad File.
Cad File.
Yeah, not Cad File.
Sorry, Nick.
Cad File.
Sorry.
The kid out of Uncle, who kept like going, I'm going to go to a stag do. And we were like saying, it's stag do. Because I say it how I want to say it. But
also,
you're saying it
wrong.
He's
very young to be going stag to any do. Kind of stag
do.
It's true.
Isn't he?
Yeah, he knows he's getting married.
I said stand up, weirdly, the other day.
Stand up.
I said stand up. And it was just like, oh my God, it has been a while. Fucking hell. First gig back on Thursday.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What, you've had it or you're doing it?
Doing it.
Oh.
Tomorrow.
Where are you doing it?
Always Be Comedy, which is a nice room. But that means when it goes badly, you know.
The audience won't protect you.
So, detective, have you ever done Drunk Women Solving Crimes?
No.
Oh, you should do that.
I've heard of it. I've seen it.
I know the women that do it.
Do you?
I'll put in a good word for you.
Will you, though?
Yeah.
Because
I'm a big fan of yours.
Thanks, Nick.
Sorry. That's why we had you on.
Me too. Sorry. Did that seem like sorry. Was that what you were waiting? Sorry.
I looked at you directly, waiting for the. No, it's fine. It's fine. It didn't come immediately, so it's fine. But
big fan.
I last year I sort of, you know that thing about you're supposed to like put things out in the universe. I did. I've never done that. But
cosmic order.
I had a friend who wanted a husband, and Noel she put Evans. It out in the universe. And a month later, she met her husband, and okay. Noel Edmonds.
Which did you marry, Noel Edmonds?
I actually know a story about that, but I'm not going to do that on here.
Oh, that's we right. can. No. We've already oh, we've you know already we've nearly had Noel Edmonds sue us.
But the, but I had never played a detective, and I've always wanted to play a detective. So I put it out in the universe, and this year I have played three.
Oh, really?
Isn't that weird?
It is.
That's not weird, is it? That's you basically begging to be a detective and then they've given it.
But
to
I didn't
you.
Ask anyone.
You just said what?
I just, in the universe.
You tweeted it.
No, I know. I put it out there with my vibes.
In the hustle? You're a detective, are you?
Detective in the hustle. I did a silent witness. Okay. Great. Proper cop. And I had a trench coat and everything. And then, then I'm doing a film at the end of the year where I play a policewoman. So it's not quite a detective, but it is also in the law enforcement.
I'll tell you what. I think you're a shoo-in for a Midsummer Murders.
Do you think?
I think you're an absolute shoo-in for a Midsummer Murders.
Oh, come on.
Seems mad that you haven't been in one.
Do what does a shoo-in mean?
Like, means guaranteed.
You've got one foot in the door, you're in
you've
there.
Got a shoe-in.
In.
Oh, yes, yeah. That's what that means.
I think so.
Yeah, brilliant.
I think so. I did have an audition for Lewis once, and I remember sitting in the spotlight. There's that, like,
spotlight,
casting,
yeah, next
whatever.
To the Prince Charles Cinema.
Yeah, and I sat in the waiting room.
In Leicester Square.
Waiting for...
near Chinatown.
For those people who don't live in London, which is
they don't live in London. We have American viewers. Hi, John.
Viewers.
Listeners.
Oh my God.
Viewers.
Can people see?
They can watch us.
They can on the
webcam. That's FUBAR. It's fucked up beyond all recognition.
Do you know what? I only learned what that meant recently. It was in something. What was that?
Probably our radio show.
And you're listening to our shows.
Oh yeah, yeah. It was that. I had an audition for Lewis, which I love. It's a very classy detective one.
Sure.
And as I was waiting to go in, the door opened of the room where the casting was happening, and I heard the producer say to the casting director, "Sorry, who the fuck is this? I've literally never heard of her in my life."
Oh my goodness!
And the casting director saw me sitting. She could see because the door was open. She saw me sitting there. She's like, and she saw me see her. And we all
why would
we
you
smiled.
Ever say that,
and she's like, "Would you want to come in?" And I came in, and we had to pretend that I hadn't just heard him say, "I don't have a fucking clue who this
but
is."
But that also suggests that everyone in Lewis is a movie star or something,
right?
It's was not like audition everyone. For Lewis?
It was that was an audition for Lewis a few years ago.
Yeah,
but that's right. That's probably, and I always imagine that's what people say every time I walk into a casting. Have they've just said that? Who the fuck is this person?
That's someone who's got problems, isn't that? They're not happy in themselves, are
Thank
they?
Thank you for being supportive. Yeah. Thank you.
This is shoo-in.
It's a shoo-in.
Adieu.
Do you know anyone that's done that Death in Paradise one? Because you get to go out to Caribbean Island for... like, have you done it?
No.
Oh. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Death in Paradise, which I love. I've seen every episode.
Yeah.
That's
every time,
a good one,
it
though.
Always seems to have a different lead, doesn't it?
It does. They've had three so far.
Yeah.
I think. Why are you being so weird about it?
Nothing.
I feel like there's a story there. Oh, I know. I bet I know what the story is.
I think I might know what the story is as well.
Were you lined up? Were you in talks to be the main detective? Just nod. Well, we're on camera, so hold up three fingers for yes.
I've just been had my had the confirmation that I have not got the lead in Death in Paradise.
Oh no, really? Yeah. Oh no, I'm sorry, but you were close. It sounds like then.
I don't know how many people they were seeing. I don't imagine it was many people because... Mm. But I went in, did the audition. It's the only audition I've ever done. So you're talking about having a bad audition. It's the only audition I've ever done that I've walked away from not feeling 100% humiliated and ashamed of myself. And I went in and I actually really enjoyed it, and I thought I did quite well. So a lot of the time when you think you've done well in an audition... You haven't. And a lot of the time you think you've done badly in an audition, you haven't. And so it's impossible to tell. It's like exams, isn't it?
Yeah.
You do your exam, you hand it in, and then there's no point in worrying about it because you can't change it. So I just found out that I haven't got
the
name.
Oh, I'm sorry. But
it's
all
right. I was meant to take over from Ardal O'Hanlon. But then the thing is, and I know this sounds ridiculous, but it would have meant cancelling Edinburgh.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to. I'm really looking forward to doing Edinburgh. I'm doing two shows in Edinburgh. And I'm doing stand-up again, so that's what I'm excited about.
So didn't want it anyway.
No, no, I didn't want it anyway. I think it, do you know what though? If it was a guest part, I'd absolutely love it. But it's like a 3-year commitment.
Is it really? Well, I was quite annoyed that, well, not annoyed, but I'd heard they were looking for a new, and I was like, can they not be a woman now? And I don't mean to make everything about.
I think you'd be great.
But that's basically what I'm. That's what I'm getting at. Why was I not seen for it?
I saw Ben Miller once, and I said to him, "You are my death in paradise." But then Ardlo Hanlon was behind me. And I thought, oh no. Very, embarrassing.
Very good. Yeah, no, it's good luck to whoever gets it. And but I remember I thought, no, the BBC, they can't have a female doctor and a female death in paradise. That'd be too much. That'd be PC gone bloody mad.
Why do they keep moving on so much on Death in Paradise?
Well, it's a big commitment, I think. It'd as be Nick DI. Says, DI
gone mad, not PC.
Very.
this is great episode.
Because Death in Paradise.
Stick it in the best of, Natalie. Mark it up for the best of now.
Beth in Paradise.
That's what they call it if it became a female detective.
Yeah. It's one of those lovely. Oh, yes. Beth in Paradise.
She'd be called Beth. She'd have to be.
Yeah. I've got an idea for a TV series about a tiny woman who goes around solving crimes and shooting shit up, and it's called Susie 9mm.
Yeah, it's quite good.
She's
like
tiny.
It.
Yes. She's nine. She's 10mm tall.
This is good. With this heels. Is a good episode.
And then without heels, she's 8mm tall. She's called Susie 9mm.
Is that because of Uzi? Is that like an Uzi?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Okay, thanks.
The name came first, and then came up with this. The backstory. She was walking behind a male scientist who was messing around with toxic rays, and he was being a Billy Bellend, and she got shrunk down to the size of a pin.
She played the game. Playing a game now, Ingrid.
Oh my God,
this is my game. You have to say, I'm going to give you a name, and you have to say the next person on the list is better or worse than the person before, based entirely on my own opinion. Starting with Scarlett Johansson. Is Benny Hill better or worse than Scarlett Johansson?
Worse.
He is worse.
They're both high cards.
Based on your opinion?
Yeah.
Oh, fine.
That was right. You got it right.
Both
Tilda
high
Swinton,
cards. High cards.
Better or worse than Benny Hill?
Tilda Swinton.
Better.
Better than Benny Hill.
Natalie
again,
Portman.
A high card. I'm saying that Benny Hill is a high.
It's a high card. Well, like you know, he's in the Italian no. job.
He was.
Natalie
he
Portman.
He was in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
He was in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
He was problematic. Let's be honest.
Benny
about
Hill.
Yeah.
But he wasn't the child catcher.
Is Natalie Portman better or worse than Tilda Swinton?
Ooh, Natalie Portman.
I'd say worse.
Oh, she is worse.
Yeah. Was Benny Hill in the new Avengers movie?
Yes, he was. Yeah, he was.
Natalie Portman is better or worse than Tilda Swinton?
Worse.
Oh, I don't know. It's the high cards. Love Natalie Portman.
I did these last night, so it is people.
Carry on.
Marissa Tomei, is she better or worse than Natalie Portman?
Marissa Tomei.
Than Natalie Portman?
Worse. Oh,
better.
She is better.
Yes.
James Coburn. Ooh. Better or worse than Marissa Tomei?
Better.
He is better.
Of course he is.
The actor Charles Bronson. Better or worse than James Coburn?
Worse.
He is worse. Yeah. I mean, Charles Bronson, the violent prisoner. Is he better or worse than Charles Bronson, the actor?
Worse.
Better.
He's worse. Is Leslie Grantham better or worse than Charles Bronson, the violent prisoner?
Worse.
He is worse because he is an actual murderer,
yeah.
Whereas Charles Bronson hasn't actually murdered anyone. He's just violent.
Oh my God, is that
true? Leslie Grantham.
Tom Hardy.
Someone.
Yeah. Tom
in
Hardy.
Real life? What, the actor? Murdered someone.
Tom Hardy.
What? Yes. I'm ranked off on the internet.
Yeah, you bet.
Fucking hell.
The murder's bad.
What was the worst thing you did though? Did you just have made me down?
Oh, no, I don't like to hear a single bad word against Leslie.
Tom Hardy, who played Charles Bronson, is he better or worse than Leslie Grantham?
Better.
Better.
Better. I think you might have got 10. Is that a 10? It's a 10!
God! You got a 10! You got a 10! Oh, wow, you're a 10. That means fucking hell, you're a 10. That means that you're as good as John Niven and Sean Harris with 10, but you're better than Daniel Cook, Daniel Lawrence Taylor, Michael Legg, Solomon Gray, Rebecca Staten with 9, Claudia Blakely, Jordan Brooks, Suze Kempner, Evelyn Mott, Paul F. Taylor, Rebecca Schroeder, Mark Smith, and Carl Theobald with 8, Hayley Campbell, Brett Goldstein, Tom Goodman Hill, Charlie Higson, Matthew Holness, Jim Hoskin, Laura Lex, Hester Smith, Ian Smith, Elliot Speller, Gillett, Josh Widdicombe, Sean McLaughlin with 7, Drunk Women Solving Crime, Taylor Glenn and Anna George, Matt Hyson, Colin Holt, Andy Kinley, Merritt Lowered, Lucy Porter, John Robbins, Richard Sandling, Mark Simmons, David Trent with 6, Yasmin Akram, Rob Deering, Tom Meaton, Glenn Wool, Joey Page with 5, Jack Barry, Bunny Galore, Taylor Glenn and Kate Wilkins with 4, and Sam Ashurst with 2.
Is it 3?
Sam Ashurst with 2. There was a bit of controversy and they wanted us to look into the Sam Ashurst score. Some people are saying there's no way Sam Ashurst got 3, and you're quite right, he didn't. We've looked into it, our boffins have been around the clock, and it turns out that Sam Ashurst got a bloody 2. There's an actual natural barrier between Sam Ashurst's score, no one's got 3, and 4 with Jack Barry, Bunny Galore,
10.
I can't believe
10.
You're not eating sugar, but I got us all a sour pop.
Oh, that's all right. I'll have it for when I can eat sugar.
Very pleased. No, we were meant to eat them on the radio, but we've missed the opportunity. I'll save it for another guest, okay. A better guest, one that's eating sugar. So complete the title of the 2000. Oh my God! What are the chances of this? Complete the title of a 2015 movie, Avengers: Age of
Ultron.
Is it Time?
Oh,
Ultra.
Oh, no.
Revenge, or. I can't think of another.
It was called The Age Ultron. Of Time.
Ultron. I forgot there was multiple choice. Yeah, Ultron. There we go.
Matter. You don't have to remember. It's been wonderful having you in.
Thank you. Very good. Very much. It's nice
so the Hustle comes out when?
May 10th.
May 10th. What day is it now?
It's the first May.
No, it's not because it's on Friday.
It's the third of May.
Friday
the
today.
Day.
Yes, today is Friday, the 3rd of May.
So it's not going out like. Right, we got right to the final hurdle, and you absolutely fucked us.
Can we start again? Should we start again? It's midday. Let's start again at midday.
Trouble is, the editing software has gone down, so we're going to have to re-record the whole 2-hour show again from scratch.
I've got nothing else to do.
Here's a little treat for you. This is... we're going to finish the show now with our favourite song. It's David Essex's Ghostbusters.
Oh, this is good.
I think I've been slammed. Something weird and it don't look good. Who you gonna call? Ghostbusters!
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.